Court will proceed to the sixth case. United States versus Jones. Ms. Barbieri.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jennifer Barbieri, and I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Cyril Jones. Unless the court would prefer a recitation of the facts, I'll get straight to the argument.
We don't give you a whole lot of time to start with, so you can rest assured we're familiar with the facts.
Thank you, Your Honor. I am here today to respectfully request this court reverse the trial court in this matter and remand it for hearing on one of the following issues. First, that defendant Jones be allowed to withdraw his guilty plea in this matter, or allow the defendant an evidentiary hearing on his motion to withdraw his guilty plea, and allow the defendant a new sentence hearing specifically with regards to his relevant conduct. If I may address briefly the first point, Your Honors, I believe the argument is that the trial court should not bifurcate acceptance of the plea of guilty and the acceptance of the plea agreement. I would direct this court's attention to its case, United States versus Ellison. While it was not in its holding, footnote 5 in this case indicated, while we cannot say the court's method of bifurcating the acceptance of plea and the acceptance of plea agreement is legally incorrect, we strongly urge that such a procedure be avoided in the future. In this case, the defendant entered his plea with the plea agreement. Judge Murphy took that under advisement. While accepting the plea of guilty, he decided to wait on the acceptance for the plea agreement. Again, we understand that this is not illegal. However, we believe that it would be in the court's best interest to hold off acceptance of the plea of guilty when the plea agreement is also going to be accepted. For the second argument, the trial court should have allowed the defendant an evidentiary hearing on his motion to withdraw. Public policy would encourage the defendant has a right to an evidentiary hearing in this matter. When the defendant is pleading guilty, he's giving up all of his rights, as the court is well aware. Now, this isn't taken lightly. The Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure 11 gives a very detailed outline on how an acceptance of a plea of guilty should be taken. However, compare this to Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure 32, which the defendant is required to give a fair and just reason to withdraw his guilty plea. However, there is no clear guidelines for the court to follow. The court can either accept, deny, or grant a hearing. Given the fact that the defendant is given so much protection in Federal Rule 11, it would seem that the defendant should be given the same protection when he expresses a desire to withdraw his plea of guilty. I would also direct the court's attention to the case of Zeffirano versus United States, wherein the court can determine and look at the amount of time that expires in between when a defendant enters his plea of guilty and then attempts to withdraw that guilty plea. The court noted that that can be taken into consideration. Looking at the facts of this case, Mr. Jones entered into a guilty plea within hours after entering that plea, long before the ink had dried on the order, he attempted to withdraw that guilty plea. I believe that this shows the court that there is potentially some problems with the entering of the guilty plea on this day. But more importantly is to look at the facts of the case, look at the day that the guilty plea was entered. In this case, the defendant took 4 breaks during his change of guilty plea. I would direct the court's attention to page 7 of the change of plea transcript, where once the judge commented that the defendant would not have to testify in trial, there was a break so the defendant could speak with his attorney. Again, when the defendant requested a break, when the judge indicated that he would actually have to testify against himself today when he was entering his plea of guilty. The defendant requested another break when he asked if anyone had made any promises to him outside of the plea agreement that the judge had in front of him. And finally, he requested another break when the judge was reciting the facts upon which the transactions and his discussions with the agents transpired. These repetitive breaks during this very, very short hearing presents a problem. Perhaps it means the defendant did not understand what was going on this day. Furthermore, the defendant improperly responded to Judge Murphy's questions when he specifically asked him about the sentencing guidelines and the potential fine. The judge's own comment, which I believe is the most strongest point for the defendant in this case, is on page 11 of the transcript. Judge Murphy indicated, "Mr. Jones, I know this is a hard day for you. I understand it. There is nobody here who thinks less of you because you are having a hard time with it. You would have to be a fool not to feel bad." I think the judge's own comments right there indicate that maybe he had an inkling the defendant did not understand what was going on. Given the fact that within 24 hours, the defendant then filed a motion to withdraw his guilty plea, at the very least, the defendant should have been granted an evidentiary hearing so the court could see all of the facts and determine whether or not he would be allowed to withdraw that plea.
I think facts have something to do with his Herm Smith.
I'm sorry?
This Herm Smith that's supposedly in prison and not able to have and sold drugs. Is that why there would be an evidentiary hearing?
Your Honor, the fact dealing with Herm Smith actually went to the defendant's relevant conduct in this matter. The indictment and the charges were simply from three controlled buys and evidence that was found at the defendant's home. The testimony regarding Herm Smith was regarding a statement he gave to the police the day he was arrested, and that really had to do with his relevant conduct, not so much as the withdrawal of the plea.
Okay, well, because I wasn't clear on that. It wasn't. I wondered also just to as far as the amount of drugs, which I guess you get to, is whether that had something to do with that.
It did, Your Honor. In that case with Mr. Smith, the three charges that they had the controlled buys with and the drugs they found at his home total combined 70 grams of crack cocaine. He was sentenced as though he had dealt more than a kilogram and a half. The only evidence with regards to that kilogram and a half was the statement the defendant made the very day he was arrested, stating over his life he probably distributed more than a kilogram and a half of crack cocaine. What came to light when they were dealing with the relevant conduct is the fact that his statement indicated, starting in approximately 1996, he began to deal with this individual, Mr. Herm Smith. However, the facts have come up that was physically impossible for the defendant to have been dealing with Herm Smith, as that Mr. Smith was a member of the Bureau of Prisons since 1992. So I believe that was one of the main points the defendant had, is that if you are going to sentence me as if I have distributed a kilogram and a half, and your only evidence is my statement, and I come to you and say this is not correct and I can prove to you that it's not, then at the very least there should be some sort of hearing on that matter.
Wouldn't the conduct of the district judge here indicate that he was sensitive to whether or not the plea was being entered voluntarily?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I think that, like I indicated, just by the court's own comments and the number of breaks, I think that the judge understood that there may have been a problem. And as I said, combining that with the quick turnaround for the motion to withdraw the plea, I think that it would have been in the judge's best discretion to at least allow an evidentiary hearing on that motion.
No, not if, well, if the judge had spent time with the defendant just the day before and ensuring that a plea was voluntary, and the fact that a request to withdraw it's given the next day doesn't necessarily mean in my mind that there was a problem in the first place.
I understand, Your Honor. I just think at this point that to be sure that everything was on the up and up, if you will, it would have been best to at least grant him an evidentiary hearing in this matter. If I can briefly direct the court's attention to the case of United States versus Hawthorne, the court noted, even a meticulous Rule 11 inquiry by the court may not foreclose the defendant's opportunity to withdraw a guilty plea if the interests of justice require. And I believe that's what we have here. We're not indicating to the court that Judge Murphy did not follow Rule 11. We're simply indicating that sometimes that just may not be enough. I see that I'm into my rebuttal time. If the court has no further questions.
Okay.
Thank you.
Ms. Scott.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Angela Scott. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney for the Southern District of Illinois. I'll be very brief. I think on the first issue, as we say in our brief, Mr. because the judge expressly accepted his guilty plea, but only deferred acceptance of the plea agreement, he was required to show a fair and just reason under Rule 32E, excuse me, which he did not do in this case. Secondly, he says, well, if I was required to meet Rule 32E, then the court should have had an evidentiary hearing to show or to address my concerns and my motion withdraw. I don't believe that that is the case here. The case law says that a motion to withdraw should be granted if the movement offers any substantial evidence that impugns the validity of the plea, and that it can be denied without a hearing if only there are only mere conclusions in his motion. That's what the defendant did here. The defendant set out one paragraph saying, here's all the problems I had with this change of plea hearing, but he never offered anything more than mere conclusions. Every issue that he raised in his motion to withdraw had been clearly addressed by the judge during the change of plea hearing. The judge went over everything with him very thoroughly. As opposing counsel pointed out, he gave him ample breaks to talk to his lawyer. He gave him time to make sure that this plea was voluntary. The judge took lots of time with him. And in fact, when the judge was talking about what kind of sentences Mr. Jones was looking at, he specifically had Mr. Jones recite back to him what the statutory penalties were so that he could be sure that Mr. Jones, in fact, knew what he was looking at. Again, since Mr. Jones' motion directly contradicted the statements he had given just the day before under oath, it was necessary for him to overcome the presumption of verity that attached to those statements. He didn't do it. Again, all he said in his motion to withdraw was just mere conclusions. You know, I relied on my lawyer, and so I made the wrong decision. But when the judge asked him, do you have any problems with your lawyer, he said no. So I believe that Mr. Jones never offered any fair and just reason for his motion to withdraw to have been, or for him to have been allowed to withdraw his guilty plea, and that there was no reason whatsoever for the court to have granted an evidentiary hearing. With respect to the relevant conduct, the probation officer relied on the crack cocaine that had been seized from him, the crack cocaine that he gave up voluntarily. They relied on the statements that he made himself to the arresting officer and also two other statements. The court considered these statements. He decided that there was sufficient indicia reliability with these statements, and so he found that relevant conduct was proven by preponderance of the evidence. With respect to Mr. Jones's own statement, as this court pointed out in the past, no one is more qualified than the dealer himself to put a number on the amounts of cocaine he was purchasing and reselling. Mr. Jones went into detail about how much cocaine he had been selling. With respect to this Herm Smith, he gives this blanket assertion, oh, Mr. Smith was in prison, but he never, not even at sentencing, does he offer any evidence. He never brings in any BOP records. He never calls Mr. Smith to say that this is the same Herm Smith that I was supposedly selling to that was in prison.
The government said something about a lot of Herm Smiths in prison.
That's correct, Your Honor. The probation officer in the PSR stated that there were several Herm Smiths and there was no way to know whether the Herm Smith that the defendant was referring to was actually incarcerated in the BOP. And of course, the defense attorney came back and said, well, hey, you know, I allege he was in Greenville and he was here there in 1996, so that should be enough. But the defendant, again, brought no records or anything in front of the court to warrant the court finding that what the PSR said was not true.
And it was the attorney, Ms. Scott, representing on his investigation that the Herm Smith in question was in prison. Was that some representation as an officer of the court he was making? You just referenced the defense attorney's comment.
Right, and he said, you know, I believe that he made this comment based on what his client had told him. But again, I don't believe that Mr. Daniel went so far as to verify or come up with any.
Did he seek time, an extension of time to do the same?
No, not that I'm aware of, no. No, he did not. And I see that my time is up. If there are no further questions, I would ask that you affirm the district court's decision. Thank you.
Ms. Barbary.
Your Honor, thank you.
As far as with regards to the defendant's request for a motion to withdraw his guilty plea, I ask the judges how a defendant can prove he has a fair and just reason to withdraw his guilty plea if he is not afforded a hearing and an opportunity to present those reasons to the court. If you combine the facts that we have here discussed today with regards to the change of plea hearing with the allegations contained in his motions, I believe there is a potential that there was a fair and just reason, and an evidentiary hearing is not too much to ask for the court in order to make sure the defendant's rights are being protected. In addition, the defendant's own statements, as indicated, are inculpatory, and they wonder why the defendant would make such statements. The evidence offered with regards to Herm Smith, the name, the timing of his sentence, the location in the prison system, his actual job in the prison, all indicated there was a very good possibility that Mr. Herm Smith was the gentleman that the defendant was indicating it was not possible he was dealing with. Again, this should have raised some eyebrows, you know, give the defendant a hearing. I see that my time is up.
Do you have any comment on my inquiry about counsel seeking time to establish the, quote, who the Herm Smith is?
Your Honor, I was not involved at the trial level. My understanding is Mr. Daniels did do some research into the matter of Herm Smith, which is why he showed the court the information he had on him. I am not aware of why extra time was not requested.
All right. Well,
thank you, Your Honor.
All right, thanks to both counsel, and the case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.